This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Mark Kermode, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Some movies coming out. Classic Week, Hancock, Kung Fu Panda, My Winnipeg, all that kind of stuff. We'll squeeze in as much as we can.
Yeah, we're going to start with The Visitor, which is the smaller. I want to get that out of the way before we hit the blockbusters.
Right, OK. Box office top 10. Thanks for all the correspondence. We'll get through as much as we can. At 10, Thoda Pyar, Thoda Magic.
Well, this is our standard call out to anybody who has seen it to send us in a review. Apparently, it's a Hindi children's fantasy. Please send us a text and tell us what it's like.
Superhero movie at 9.
Not funny in the slightest bit, and let's call that quits forever and ever and not make another one of those.
The Happening at 8.
Which is the M. Night Shyamalan movie, about which this debate has been raging as to whether or not it was pre-cut before it got to the BBFC, and even if it wasn't pre-cut, does it make any more sense? I still don't think it's terrible in the way that many of the listeners have written in saying it's absolutely terrible. I think at least he's trying to do something adventurous, but I think he does have a problem in that it is sanctimonious and it is very, very full of itself.
The director from henceforth, the listeners suggested to be known as M. Night to Remember Shalimar.
Very good.
That'll work.
Oh, yes, of course. Very clever.
The Edge of Love at 7.
In which Keira Knightley proves that she can deliver a half decent performance, and her co-star proves that she can't.
Sex and the City is at number 6. Dear Hawkeye and BJ, says Phil, last week Mark mentioned he wanted to compose a register of educated people who choose to watch Sex and the City. Yes. You can add to this list my girlfriend Mickey, who's going to see it tonight. She's a doctor and has recently completed her master's degree. She's going to see it with her best friend, who's also a doctor. And to be fair, I'm not going. I'm just glad that they've had a good time. Lots of other people joining this register of
things. But they haven't had a good time yet. They're going to see it. What we want is the email afterwards, which is they went to see it and they came back and wished that they hadn't. It's not just a matter of an intelligent person having seen the film. I mean, hey, I've seen the film. It's a matter of an intelligent person liking the film.
Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull is at 5.
I think you'll find it's Indiana Jones. Indiana Jones and No Scones for Me, Mama, I'm off to play the grand piano. Yes, he's doing some adventuring with that Steven Spielberg, but what do you say Indiana Jones It's Indiana Jones.
It just is what it is.
And is that record called Indiana Wants Me?
By Ardeen Taylor. Indiana Wants Me. Yes, it is, yes.
Would you like some strawberries and cream?
It is, that.
You've gone all toffee nose since you got to Wimbledon.
Adulthood at 4. I just like to, you know, blend in with the background.
OK. It's not as good as Kidulthood.
Actually, he says Indiana Wants Me.
He doesn't.
Lord,
he says,
I can't go back
He
there.
Says Indiana Wants Me. And it's definitely Indiana Jones.
Adulthood at 4.
It's not as good as Kidulthood, but I am a fan of Noel Clarke's, and I think that in the future he will do something better.
Incredible Hulk at 3.
Not incredible, certainly Hulky. Demonstrates once again that there is a fundamental problem with that particular story, which is that the Jekyll and Hyde bit doesn't work, because when he's a bloke you believe in him, when he turns into the Jolly Green Giant you just don't.
Wanted at 2.
Or unwanted, as somebody wittily put it. I mean, it's a very peculiar movie. It's a strange choice for James McAvoy. I suppose one of the reasons he's chosen it is because it's gone in, you know, it's a big blockbuster and he knew it would go into the top 10. It is a film in which all the sex scenes involve not people, but, you know, machinery and guns. And it is clearly makes no more sense than the director's previous efforts, Night Watch and Day Watch.
Dear Fontaine and Nureyev, says Dr. Mark.
And now, who's who? I'm definitely Margot Fontaine.
That'll be fine with me. I went to see Wanted, High Hopes. Trailers looked fun. Cast was great. What a pile of pants.
Yeah.
I was quite enjoying the first half, apart from not being able to follow the action sequences. But when we got to the, shall we call it, paternal reveal, I lost all interest as the slim plot fell to pieces.
The paternal reveal, that's very good. Do you see that what he did
That's
there?
Not what he put, that's my version of it.
Oh, right.
He gives it away.
Oh, does he? Okay, fine.
The new case number one is The Chronicles of Narnia, Prince Caspian, Narnia 2.
I've seen it twice now, because I went on the weekend with my kids, and you remember I said that one of the things I thought was going to be a problem with it was that I thought it was probably too long. It's a very big ask, 2 hours and 20 minutes for a young audience, but in fact they sat through it and enjoyed it very much. The story did make sense to them, although I think a lot of people will have read the book in advance and will therefore know what's going on more. And again, Peter Dinklage, who I think is an absolutely terrific actor, brings a little bit of magic to it. I think that the magic is going out of it. As I said before, I think that they'd be lucky if they get one more movie out of this. They're not going to get much more than that out of it. But it's perfectly solid, good, well-made kids' entertainment, slightly unremarkable. Not quite as charming as the first, but on the evidence that I have, it is going down well with the younger audience.
Most of our correspondence so far, all about Hancock, which we'll get to at the conclusion of this match and before the next semi-final. Give us a quick review and tease us as to something that we might be able to go and see this week.
Can I very quickly tell you about that Visitor? Do you want me to review it or do you want me to tease you about it?
I would do a tease review.
Okay, well, Visitor is the new film by the guy who made The Station Agent. Remember him, Thomas McCarthy? And he came on the programme. And The Station Agent is an absolutely terrific movie starring Peter Dinklage, who is, you know, currently becoming one of my favourite actors, I think I mentioned before. The story...
About 30 seconds ago you mentioned him.
Yeah, I know, so I'm just saying him again. Peter Dinklage,
well,
Peter Dinklage, Peter
well.
Dinklage. No, he's not. You're not listening at all. You're looking over my shoulder at people playing tennis. Pay attention, okay? Keep up. Thomas McCarthy, the guy who made The Station Agent. The Visitor is a story about a college professor whose life is basically stalled. He is mourning and everything is academically dried up. He goes to his apartment in New York, which he very rarely goes to, and discovers that there's a married couple living there, visitors from overseas, and... His life begins again as he develops a relationship with these two people, one of whom starts to teach him how to play the bongos. And the next thing you know, the immigration people move in. He's hoiked off to an immigration thing, and it becomes a story about anti-deportation. Now, what's very interesting is Thomas McCarthy makes movies that are, on one level, issue movies. I mean, you could say this is a movie about immigration, it's about deportation, it's about the politics of the way.
And it's politics, capital P. I mean, it's quite obvious. Well, wears it on its sleeve.
Well, I was about to say, but what's interesting about it is that it's not politics with a capital P.
It doesn't wear
those politics on its sleeve in exactly the same way that The Station Agent, you could say, was an issue movie because it stars Peter Dinklage. Did I mention him before?
No.
4'5", and yet his height is very much not the centre of the film. It's actually a film about people finding strange relationships with other people, and it's a very positive view of life. The thing I liked about The Visitor, he has a terrific performance at its centre by Richard Jenkins, who starts off being incredibly misanthropic, really, really sort of dour and miserable and staid and dried up, and during the course of the movie discovers some new kind of life. It has characters that I actually believe in. Some of the reviews have said, well, actually, the people that he meets are much too nice to be realistic. I completely disagree with that. I think that movies do not have to have a misanthropic approach towards the human race, and it's lovely to see a movie which actually believes in its people and cares about its people. I think it's got a very organic script that seems to have started at one point and then wandered off this way a little bit and wandered back that way, which is, I think, the thing that makes Thomas McCarthy's movies not politics with a big P, nor wearing its politics on its sleeve. And I felt at the end of it thoroughly satisfied by having seen a film that was actually about people that I actually believed in and actually cared about, and thought, you know what? It is, it's that word that one never likes to use. It's genuinely charming without being twee or quaint or patronising, or indeed wearing its politics with a large P on its sleeve.
It sounds as though the politics is quite large with the P, and it is indeed got liberal stuff all over its sleeve.
Well, that means that I haven't adequately described
What
do you mean I wouldn't spot it? Why? Because I'm a liberal bleeding heart lefty.
You could say that. Former member of the Communist Party.
If there's nothing
Elvis
liberal and bleeding heart about them. Yes, and believe me, believing in Elvis is nothing to do with communism. Elvis, like Richard Nixon. Elvis was a big fan of Richard Nixon's. Elvis turned up at the White House absolutely loaded in wanting to go and meet Richard Nixon and shake his hand and congratulate him on the fabulous work that he'd done. And when he finally met Richard Nixon, who you'll remember from previous conversations is the devil, Elvis burst into tears. I still love Elvis.
And this from Mark in Glasgow, this long-running thing about whether intelligent people like Sex and the City. Mark says, Sex and the City, I saw it, I have a bachelor's degree, 2 masters and a doctorate. So he outscores both of us.
Yeah.
Wish I could say I loved it. It was
there
pants,
we go. Pants, there we go.
He says, us doctors have to stay together. Sarah in Norwich, having just got a degree from Cambridge, I'd say I'm fairly clever. A bunch of us went to see Sex and the City after our finals. On the whole, we loved it. We were mostly female. There's so much for the eyes to feast on. It's funny that the plot's fairly enjoyable too.
Yeah, and I read a thing in the press recently about the declining standards at Oxford and Cambridge. I hear that Manchester is currently ranked higher in the clever standards.
Dear Galton and Simpson, now this is on the subject of Hancock, which is one of the movies... which you'll have noticed all the posters for this week. Went to see Will Smith's latest this evening. I have to say I enjoyed it. Mark's thoughts in a moment.
Because it opened on Wednesday, started previewing on Wednesday.
Right. It's a different take on the superhero genre. Well worth seeing in my view. However, it has to be pointed out there is no mention of the radio ham or the last page. And despite many scenes in a hospital, no mention is made of that being nearly an armful. They've also filmed it mainly in LA rather than East Cheam. And while Charlize Theron makes for a fairly attractive Mrs. Cravat, much of the charm of the original, I think, has been lost. That's Mark in Mossman.
Very good.
I think that needs to be pointed, probably under-discussed in America, particular feature of Hancock, one of the movies that's out this week.
Shall we do that first?
Let's do it now.
Okay, so Hancock is meant to be the superhero movie with a difference. The difference is that, as played by Will Smith, he is a drunk and a layabout and is generally looked down upon by the people of Los Angeles, who he theoretically protects. The first time we see him, he's sleeping on a park bench. Little boy has to come and wake him up and go, "Oi, Hancock, you have to go and help some people." So he can do all the superhero things. He's got super strength. He can fly. but he is basically a bum. And very, very early on, he saves Jason Bateman from dying. And Jason Bateman is a PR guy. And Jason Bateman basically says to him, look, you need me to sort out your life. Here is a clip from Hancock.
Do you know what I do for a living? I'm in public relations. You know what that is? Of course you do. We're image consultants. We change the way people see products, companies, people, and all this stuff. And listen, I see you on the news, and I see you out there today, and it can't feel good that people, you know, hate you.
It's good to meet you, Ray.
No, I'm sorry, but I mean, you know, hear me out. I mean, people, don't get me wrong, they should love you. They really should, okay? And I want to deliver that for you. It's the least that I can do, you know? You're a superhero. Kids should be running up to you asking for your autograph. People should be cheering you on the streets, you know?
The hell are you looking at?
Well, no, no, they're not.
It's all right.
No, they're just, they're people. But I want you to give me one short pitch, you know? That's all I ask, okay? Email me or whatever, you fly on over, I don't know. You know, I want you to think about it. Okay, just be careful when you go. You sleep on it. All right? You get back to me, I'll be right here. All right, please don't stare, you guys. He's kind of one of us.
Now, look, from that clip, okay, that sounds like an interesting movie. Because
Will Smith movie, yeah.
Yeah, usually when you play a superhero clip, it is, I am Thor, God of Thunder, and I am Iron John. You know, that's
I like
it,
that.
Yeah, exactly.
That's,
well,
that's good.
How, and then it goes, you know, shh, and then big robots hit each other. So there we have, you know, some quite well-written dialogue. It's an interesting little idea. The superhero, he's a drunk, he's washed up, people don't like him, they're thinking of suing. Although, actually, that does start to smack very slightly of what was the other film you saw in which the superheroes had to stop being superheroes because people were suing them.
The Incredibles.
The Incredibles, yes. And it was 20 minutes if I went, oh, hang on, I have seen that before. It's The Incredibles. But, on the other hand, the idea of a superhero needing a PR person, that's quite interesting. Some of the Superman comics, the original Superman comics, did deal with that area slightly. But it's a Spider-Man issue as well. You know, he's looked down on by the newspapers. It's an anti-media thing. But so there's an interesting movie going on in there. And then, as always happens with multi-million dollar blockbuster superhero movies, it's like halfway through they go, oh, I can't be bothered with this. We spent millions of dollars. We've got to have some big fights. And there's a plot twist at which it is revealed that somebody else is also a superhero. We're not going to go into who because, obviously, I want to keep whatever tension there is. And then it's superheroes versus baddies. Now, admittedly, you get people like Eddie Marsden, who's, I think, a good character actor. And you have...
He was a taxi driver last time we saw him.
I know, yeah. And isn't he a great actor?
He was great. I can't imagine him as a superhero.
No, although, funnily enough, as a taxi driver in that film, he is... Enraha, Poppy, Enraha. That was good. That, I think, for both of us, was the best thing about Happy-Go-Lucky, wasn't it?
Yep.
Because the rest of the film was slightly challenging.
We just agreed on something.
And it's upbeat optimism. We have. That's why I'm sort of slightly flanning.
You must be wrong.
But in the case of Hancock, I was very, very disappointed that what happened was you got, you know, the setup that's interesting and strange and is going to do something with the... And then literally, it's almost exactly on the halfway time mark, they go, no, can't be bothered, going to do a superhero movie. And this has become the rule of superhero movies. You know, when I reviewed... Iron Man, I said it's like two-thirds of a good film. In the case of Hulk, it's exactly half a good film. All the Hulk stuff that's good is the stuff with Edward Norton. All the stuff that's bad is the stuff when he's the Hulk, and then he meets the Super Hulk, and then they start fighting each other. And I am pinning all my hopes on the new Batman movie, because what happened before with the Christopher Nolan Batman movie was he managed to make a multi-million dollar, huge, big epic, but which all the way through kept its eye on the prize, all the way through knew that it wasn't just enough to have big scenery and big explosions. It had to be character-driven. The whole thing had to, you know, fit the mythology properly. And what we've seen so far with the superhero movies since then is just this constant wimping out. It's, I'm going to do something strange, I'm going to do something, no, I'm not, I'm going to do robots hitting each other. Iron Man got to two-thirds of the way through and then, I think, lost the plot. This, it's almost exactly the halfway mark, and it's so disappointing because it's just like you kind of invest a certain amount of hope and a certain amount of trust in it, and then it just goes, you know what? Let's just have superheroes thumping each other.
Dearest Rocky and Apollo, says Paul O'Dwyer, just saw Hancock, so far I put it down as the disappointment of the summer blockbuster.
There we go.
All of the others did exactly what it said on the tin. This had so much potential to be different. Unfortunately, it took a turn for the worse with the introduction of the other superhero.
There we go.
Never really recovered. Also, whilst it was nice to see Captain Hook working again, he was surely the worst superhero movie villain in celluloid history. Dear Stop It and Tidy Up, went to see Hancock today, really enjoyed it, but would have enjoyed it more if they'd stuck to the public redemption story instead of, without giving anything away, the other story.
Exactly.
Especially as it seemed like they just mashed the two storylines together and didn't really flesh out either.
Yes.
All that said, still an enjoyable way to spend the afternoon, in the opinion of Nikki. Mark from Musselburgh, who did the very few references in Hancock to the radio ham, and
yes,
maybe they've underreported that.
Very good.
An interesting PS. Can the good doctor confirm that Emma Thompson is credited now with the highest body count in movie history? 5.4 billion people.
Because she's
nearly all the surviving population turned into mutant killing machines, for good measure, in another Will Smith movie, I Am Legend.
That's very good, because at the very beginning of that film, you see Emma Thompson as the person, as the scientist who has invented the vaccine that will cure cancer, and then we skip forward to, I think it's maybe 6 months later or a year later, and everybody has, as you say, been turned into necrotizing zombies.
And this from a really long epistle.
And that's very good, actually. Highest body count ever. That's very good.
If anyone can beat 5.4 billion, she's the biggest mass murderer in
movie
history.
But surely Prosthetnik Yogan Veltz from the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy wipes out the whole of Earth
good
with a single switch. So
Bobby in Sydney, but formerly of Eastbourne. Great long thing about Hancock.
Yeah. Did he say it's rubbish?
Yeah. No, well, he
Same.
The film's inability to tell a story without resorting to the lowest common denominator plot twist made what could have been a decent tale about a down-on-his-luck superhero into a terrible, terrible mess of a film. Hancock is truly one of the worst films I've ever seen, especially considering the semblance of promise it showed in its early minutes. Considering how The Good Doctor is always lamenting how films are good for two-thirds and then go all Transformers, I'm interested to hear his opinion on that.
Well, there we go. And I think that the real shame here is that it doesn't even hit the two-thirds mark. I mean, I'm sort of at the point in which I'm thinking that, you know, if you take the Chris Nolan stuff as the high watermark, any movie that can get to two-thirds of its running time, any superhero action movie that can get to two-thirds of its running time before it gives up the ghost and becomes rubbish is actually pretty good. Halfway is really not good enough at all.
So we've done Hancock. What else might tempt us?
Let's do The Mist, which is the new movie by Frank Darabont, based on a novella by Stephen King. You, of course, know that Frank Darabont is the guy who directed The Shawshank Redemption, also from a novella by Stephen King. This is now his
third... He'll be your mate, then.
Well, I don't know that mate's the right word. I made a documentary about Shawshank Redemption, and I wrote a book about Shawshank Redemption, and I have, you know, I've had conversations with Frank Darabont, and I like very much, although he's had a slightly troubled career since Shawshank, because Shawshank is considered by many people to be their favourite movie of all time. On the Internet Movie Database poll, it's up there with Star Wars and The Godfather as people's favourite film. Anyway, so along comes The Mist, and The Mist is sort of in some ways a throwback kind of B-movie monster thing, and the story is there's a group of people who are essentially trapped in a convenience store in small-town America when a mist descends. And in the mist are a whole bunch of originally unseen, but vaguely, as things go on, more and more seen, strange gribblies, which change from either insecty gribblies to long, tentacular, strange, squid-like stuff. So inside the shopping mall, people, an entire microcosm of the nation, outside, an unnameable force of hideous nastiness closing in around them. But of course what happens is, inside the shopping mall, they all start turning on each other. So shades of Romero, shades of the zombie movies, shades of The Crazies most particularly, and of course a very big dig at the rise of fundamental Christianity, because one of the people is in the movie who looks like doing most of the harm inside the thing is a nutball fundamentalist Christian. Here's a clip.
All this talk of a modern God, or no God. There is one God, the God of the Israelites. And he is a stern and vengeful God. And we have been mocking him far too long. And now he demands retribution in blood. It is time to declare yourselves. Take sides, the saved and the damned. Read the good book. It calls for expiation. Blood.
What?
Blood. Little Normie was first, and now God calls the rest of us. The bill is due. It must be paid. As Abraham prepared to sacrifice his only son to prove his love for God, so another down payment, a few more pennies in the jar.
Now that's nice. See, I can't smack her, but it's okay for you.
I'm sorry, everybody, but this lady's perspective is a little too Old Testament for my taste.
He'll come for you. Maybe tonight, when darkness comes, they'll come tonight. And they'll take someone else. See if they don't.
Now, my guess in the current Anglican debate that aforementioned Christian is probably not on the side of Rowan Williams.
Shall I very quickly finish with The Mist?
Yes, go on. And by definition, is The Mist slightly less scary than
The Fog? You see, and you're not the first person to make that gag either. This is a much better film than The Fog, which is actually one of John Carpenter's less successful movies.
And there's quite a few of those.
Here's the interesting thing. There are some very good actors in this. Marcia Gay Harden, obviously Toby Jones, a British actor who I like very much. And it starts off being a pretty straightforward, you know, people trapped in shopping mall with unnamed thing outside movie. And at first you think, well, it's going to be a sort of 50s inflected B-movie, quite jolly romp. As the group start to fall apart within the shop, it becomes more and more bitter, more and I mean, Frank Darabont's very interesting. He's quite a politically sort of aware kind of guy.
Are the politics on his sleeve, would you say?
The politics aren't on his sleeve.
And capital P.
No, but I tell you what, there are a lot more capital P than they are in The Visitor. I mean, basically, it is talking about the way in which a society will fracture itself, will do all the damage to itself. All you need to do is lock a whole bunch of people together and leave them alone. It's a sort of Lord of the Flies story to some extent. People will tear things apart of their own accord. But here's the most extraordinary thing. When the movie opened in America, it did respectably, but really not as well as it should have done. And I'm pretty sure that the reason that it didn't do as well as it should have done is it has one of the bleakest, most downbeat endings of modern cinema. It's you know, the whole...
They all die?
The whole thing... No, it's not as simple as that. You know, the whole
is
thing
it
was...
worse than that?
Yes, it is worse than that. Mm. It is worse than they all die. You know, the whole thing about Shawshank Redemption is that Shawshank Redemption is this movie about hope. Hope springs eternally to short story. And that's the big thing about it. And everybody comes out of it...
Though there's a lot of Shawshank before you get to the redemption.
There's a lot of Shawshanking before you get to the hope. But there is, in the end, hope is the thing that sees him through. In the case of The Mist, it is the most hopeless, bleak, absolutely black, you know, end of apocalyptic.
So they all die, and so are we.
No, it's not that they all die. It's worse than that. And if you are, as I am, somebody who actually likes really pessimistic horror, having the strength to follow it, you know, to follow its convictions, and give you something really unpalatable, then this movie will not disappoint you. Frank Darabont said that a studio said they would give him twice as much money to make it if he changed the ending, and he didn't. And I really admire the fact that he didn't. If you want to leave a movie with a real feel-bad feeling, The Mist is the movie for you.
Do you think there'll be a large queue snaking around the corner?
I suspect that there will. I suspect that when people want horror,
they want horror.
They want, I saw it a good few months ago now, and I've read several reviews since then. I haven't read a single review, no matter whether people think the movie works or not, not a single review that hasn't said... Blimey, I couldn't believe the ending.
Henry in Bath just returned from seeing Frank Darabont's The Mist. I must say, I found it very impressive. Probably the best monster movie since Cronenberg's The Fly.
That's high praise.
I've never really been a fan of Darabont's work, but this rose high above contemporary substandard monster movies by providing genuine characterization and a tightly delivered plot. And to all the people who say that character just wouldn't do that, at its core, the film is about people's pride overwhelming their sense of logic.
You should remember, incidentally, that mentioning The Fly, I mean, before Darabont made Shawshank Redemption, he was...
Thanks, Jeff. That was really, really nice.
He was a monster movie screenwriter. He worked on the remake of The Blob, or the sequel to the remake of The Blob, and the remake of The Fly, or the sequel to... No, he must have been the sequel to the remake of The Fly. And so that's where he comes out of. He comes out of 50s monster bug movies, and that's it. That's his heritage, and it's really good to see him stepping back into it, because he was originally a monster movie kind of guy before he made Shawshank, which made him into the new messiah.
I don't know whether Dave Morrissey is here at Wimbledon, but if he is, hello, Dave.
Hello, Dave Morrissey. Hello to Jason Isaacs.
He's out on court number one. Hello, Jason, and all the sorts.
Jason Isaacs has been in America in some very, very swanky TV program.
All right, so he's podcasting at the moment.
Yeah, probably.
Bootsy and Sludge, I went to see The Happening, and I Know Why the Wind Blows.
Okay, good, great.
So,
great.
Spoiler alert.
Yes.
I Know Why the Wind Blows.
Okay, great.
When the trees detect more than five people and release the toxin, the accumulated energy from the people causes a simultaneous short circuit in an array of giant industrial fans in the vicinity. Mark in Wembley.
Very good.
Alice says, I have a doctorate in physical chemistry from Manchester. I went to see Sex and the City with a lawyer and a medical doctor, all female, but we loved it. Dear Mark and Simon, I have a double first from Oxford, which has maintained its high standards, unlike Cambridge, and I'm doing a D-Phil there. I never liked Sex and the City on TV and have refused to see the film. I don't like judging anything that I have not seen, but having heard the good doctor's review, I have made an executive decision to spend my time more wisely. namely, watching my nice new copy of The Assassination of Jesse James
by the coward Robert Ford.
And that's from Cat in Oxford.
Can I tell you something? I did an onstage thing with Ken Russell the other day, and Ken Russell said to me, he said, I saw The Assassination of Jesse James. He said, I really didn't like it. And I said, Ken, what didn't you like about it? He said, well, it was so obvious what was going to happen. I said, Ken, it's called The Assassination of Jesse. He said, no, but it was so obvious that it was going to be him that did it. I said, Ken, it's called The Assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford. Even people who haven't seen the movie know about it.
He doesn't know nothing about film.
Well, he knows loads about film, but he just didn't happen to know that.
Tease us with one more movie.
Kung Fu Panda. Can you have it now?
Yeah.
Okay, Kung Fu Panda. It's an animated story about a panda who learns Kung Fu with the voice of Jack Black. And I saw it on the IMAX screen, but the IMAX screen is now the size of, a large house, so it's big and glitzy. And the story is that there is a... There's a panda, and there's
Kung Fu.
Yeah, he learns Kung Fu. I mean, actually, there's really no point in doing any more of the story than that. It's him as the panda, and there's a terrible threat to the city, which is that there's a tiger in prison who's going to come back and eat everybody, and there are all these other animals who've got lots of Kung Fu skills, but by some strange fluke of fate, he is chosen as the chosen one to fight the tiger that comes back, and he learns that, in fact, within his own person, there are skills that he didn't understand. It just so turns out that in order to access his true Kung Fu bravery, he has to be tempted with food. Now, it's a very, very kid-friendly film, and I have to say I rather enjoyed it. There have been a few reviews that have said there's not enough for the adults, and incidentally, by pretty much the same critics who really liked The Incredibles, because there was so much for the adults, and the 25 minutes at the beginning of it was that boring Ingmar Bergman stuff about Mr. Incredible having to work as an insurance salesman, which everybody under the age of six went... But in the case of Kung Fu Panda, it's called Kung Fu Panda. It ends with a version of Kung Fu fighting, although sadly not the Carl Douglas Kung Fu fighting, which is absolutely wonderful, but some souped-up modern version of it. And it's a bunch of knockabout fun with a bunch of knockabout animals, and it's nothing to write home about, and it has almost no memorable script lines in it at all. All the best lines seem to have been ad-libbed completely off the cuff by Jack Black. But it passed the time perfectly fine, and I did laugh quite a lot, and I thought this is a good, solid, well-made, big-budget... rather uninventive but kind of cute round the edges kids movie that isn't going to offend anybody. And what a relief that such a thing can still be made, because we have now got to the point with kids movies that people are got this terrible idea that you have to take every kids movie and make it into an adult friendly movie at the same time. There's got to be lots of self-reflexive gags about movies and The Godfather and things that the kids wouldn't understand in order to keep the parents happy. No, you want to make a kids movie, make a kids movie. You want to make Kung Fu Panda, make Kung Fu Panda. That's what they've done. They've sat down, they've gone, you know what, everything you need to know about the film's in the title. It's called Kung Fu Panda. It's about a panda that does Kung Fu.
Movie of the week,
The Mist.
An interesting choice. Now, you've already heard Jeff Tarango blow his nose, which was a quite uncalled-for intrusion.
I thought that was the QE2 docking, but apparently not.
No, that was Jeff Tarango, friend of movie stars, actually. Mark, and Jeff, you've brought a movie director.
Yeah, Tim Burton and Dick Zanuck.
Yeah, no, I saw Richard Zanuck just there. Who famously produced Jaws, and of course was the person who got the financing originally for The French Connection to happen.
Yep, and they just finished Sweeney Todd, and they're casting right now for Alice in Wonderland.
Don't tell me, Helena Bonham Carter gets it.
I'm not supposed to talk about it.
Well, what do you bring it up for, then?
I just think it's really exciting that they're deciding right now who's going to be the next Alice in Wonderland.
It'll be Helena Bonham Carter. I'm telling you. It's a word of prophecy. Bob on Kung Fu Panda says, I guess it was a little bit frightening.
It was.
Humorous.
Very good. Very good.
But
the shame of it is that they don't play the Carl Douglas Kung Fu fighting at the end. They do some souped-up version. And I do think the Carl... And can you remember what the follow-up record to Kung Fu fighting was?
No, I can't.
Dance the Kung Fu.
Right, so he really moved on and changed his
head. Yes.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.